after traveling around this country and getting ready to go to Vietnam, I finally started to narrow down. This is long before any film editing. And started to narrow down what my focus ought to be, what our focus in making the film. Three questions. Why did we go to Vietnam? What did we do there? And what did the doing in turn do to us? Okay, well, two of those questions, the last two, what did we do there and what did the doing do to us, that's trauma. But I didn't call it that then, didn't know that, but I knew that something horrifying had happened to America in the process of doing these horrifying things to the Vietnamese, dropping more bombs on Vietnam, for instance, than were dropped in all of World War II, including the Far East and Hiroshima and Europe. So, by the way, none of that's mentioned in the film, nor are the three questions. Why did we go there? I didn't want a narrator. But I didn't still know, what am I going to do with those three questions? Well, I decided, okay, everything in the film has to be related to those three questions, one or another. Or it has to at least address the question. There are no real answers to those three questions. I mean, you can say, why did we go to Vietnam, and talk about the anti-communist crusade and what happened after World War II, and we're trying to stop the Soviet Union and all that. But arguments about that. But I thought the question would resonate, even if these questions were not heard in the film. And I wanted the film to be an inquiry rather than just an anti-war blast. There had been a lot of those, and it was preaching to the converted. And I don't say that Hearts and Minds doesn't do some of that too, as much as I tried to keep it out. And the one way I tried to keep preaching out was to film Americans, only Americans, who had been for the war. In other words, or fought the war. They may have changed their minds by the time I filmed them, but at one time they'd fought the war or been for it. And that way I wasn't going to hear anti-war speeches that, which are like a narration that we didn't need to have. Okay, but I still didn't know how to make the film. I just knew how to sort of narrow down some of the many, many, many things you could do. Well, the first day in Vietnam, the crew were not there yet, but our researcher was. He spoke some Vietnamese, and he took me out to a little village. And in this village, which had been bombed, there was no fighting going on. I was very scared the whole time I was in Vietnam, by the way. Very scared. And I was the only member of the crew that was married and had kids. The others were, they were in it. They could be feeling fear too, but they loved the adventure of it. I did not. Okay, so in this village, there's a bomb crater about the size of this room. And in the bomb crater, well, there was a tree, piece of a tree, scraggly thing sticking up. And there was a bicycle, a kid's bicycle, wrapped around that tree because the bomb had done that. And there were also very colorful shards of a cooking pot that a woman had used in her kitchen, really brightly colored, but blown to pieces. So a piece of it was over there, a piece of it was there. And finally, I saw, probably I had a little denial, didn't want to see this, I saw a leg and then an arm, and another leg, and then finally the torso, but of a kid's doll, not a person, just a kid's doll. Well, at that moment, I sort of identified with a television audience and a television reporter. Television reporter in Vietnam would stand there with his microphone, and he's well in well-pressed fatigues, meaning an army uniform, maybe even wearing a helmet if he's out in a place. And before you see him, you see the bicycle, the camera's on the bicycle, then pulls back, you see the shards of the cooking pot, and then finally also see the kid's doll blown to pieces, you know? And only after that, the camera, I mean, you've really seen the effects of the war. consequences of it in a way, symbolizing all the other human consequences. Now, camera comes back, and here's the reporter. And the better he is, that reporter, the more eloquent he is in describing this village and how it was bombed, and the Viet Cong wasn't even there, or they were there, and a lot of them got killed, or they had been there, but they left before the bombing. The better he is at describing that, the further away you are from the war. But that first 12, 10, 12, 15 seconds before you, when you just heard maybe roosters crowing and stuff going on, ambient sound in the village, that first 15 seconds, they were showing you the war. That's what networks, and I trained at networks before I came to Make Hearts and Minds, I always used narrators. That first 15 seconds is what network executives call dead air. They still do call it that. They called it that in the 60s and 70s. It's dead air. In other words, get rid of it as quickly as possible and get me to the guy who's going to tell the story. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I started to understand during that moment, long moment of me looking at this bomb crater, that I think I'll make the film about dead air. That 15 seconds of dead air, we'll expand that into 2 hours. See what happens. So that's really what Hearts and Minds became.